this is Ray Rodriguez from Christian Cycling Del Marva, and you are listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas Podcast with Steve Anderson and Matthew McCabe.
And we're back. Youth Ministry Sherpas, Episode 6. Hey, everybody, I'm Steve Anderson.
And I'm Matthew McCabe. Glad to have you with us. We'd love to hear from you guys. Is ideas that you might have for future episodes, just to hear what you guys want to hear us talk about. We would love that feedback, so you could drop us a note on Facebook, you could send us an email. We'd just love to hear from you, and we'll add that to our growing list of ideas of things to talk about.
Yeah, I think we've got a list that'll carry us for quite a long time. We have many stories to tell. And well, we would love to hear your ideas and add to that list.
Speaking of stories, Steve, you got any stories of nightmare trips with your family?
Yeah. You know, I have raised 3 sons. We've taken a few vacations over the years.
And they all went perfectly, didn't they?
They were all executed to perfection.
Obviously.
Boy, there's been some funny moments. When our boys were probably 12, 10, and 6, or maybe 14, 12, and 8, we took a long trip to California. I had planned it for like 2 years, saved up as much money as I could, and we flew to Sacramento, and we rented a camper for 17 days. And so we were going to go to Yellowstone and to Sequoia National Park and to the coast and all these different places. Did I say Yellowstone?
You did say Yellowstone.
That's in Wyoming.
That's not in California. I can see why this trip went poorly, Steve.
I met Yosemite. Yeah, we tried to squeeze a little bit too much into that trip. No, Yosemite. But anyway, so we get this camper. It was sweet, man. It was a sweet camper. And we're driving into Yosemite. It was our first stop. It was like the second day of the trip. And Yosemite has those old national park roads, you know, pretty narrow. And you're right along, you know, cliffs everywhere. And it's just kind of, if you're not used to driving a camper, it's kind of scary. So I was hugging the center of the road, trying to avoid dropping my family off a cliff. And just suddenly, just wham, the window on the driver's side, right by my head, just smashed, totally smashed. And I'm like, what the heck? Everybody's screaming, the kids are crying. I pull over, and then this guy walks up to the camper, and his head is bleeding. And he goes, you clipped me. You clipped me coming the other direction. I had clipped his camper and done the same thing to his camper coming the other direction because I was so close to the center. Our mirrors hit. The mirror snapped back into my window, smashed it open. This guy's bleeding. My kids are crying. And I'm thinking, what have I done? I've just destroyed a
happy vacation.
$40,000 camper. Yeah, so we had to drive back with the camper, get the window fixed, cost us, you know, several $100s and a few days of vacation. But all in all, it turned out great. Everything was fine. But
always does tend to turn out great, but boy, in the moment, it's not fun.
Not how we intended it.
No, I bet not.
How about you? You got 4 kids. You must have had some wonderful family trips over the years.
We've had some adventures over the years. I remember when they were younger, and we would drive back to Wisconsin, which is where we're from. You know, so we'd go back every now and again in the summer. And when the kids were young, the best way to do it would be to drive through the night because they'd sleep the whole way. Otherwise, it was just a nightmare. I mean, this was a 15-hour you know, van trip. So
15 hours with kids is always awesome.
Yeah, incredible. So anyway, so we load up, we get on the road. It's everything is just cruising right along. You know, we hit about 10:30 at night. We tuck everybody into their seats. They're going to just crash out. When they wake up, we're going to be there.
Yeah.
So it's just perfectly executed.
Absolutely.
Until we were cruising along the Ohio Turnpike. And all of a sudden, the old red lights and ding, 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 ding. And oh, no. And off into a little gas station we pull. And, of course, the belt had snapped because the water pump went bad. And it just threw everything off. So there it was probably midnight. I mean, kids had been sleeping maybe an hour and a half. We were 7-8 hours from home, from where we were going.
Midnight in Ohio.
And sitting there, so we called around, found a tow truck company that would tow us to the nearest repair shop, but they couldn't come till 6 in the morning.
Okay.
And then the repair shop didn't open till 7 in the morning. Uh-huh. So there we sat. I took a little nap. Kids slept fine, no problem.
They had then, no idea.
No idea. 6 a.m. rolls around. The tow truck comes. They wake up. They're like, all right, are we there? Yeah, not quite. And then they tow us to this repair shop, and they're gonna, you know, oh yeah, we can fix it. We'll have it done in a couple hours, no problem. And I just remember the tow truck driver said, well, what are you guys gonna do for breakfast? And we're like, we didn't really plan on breakfast because we're supposed to be there already. We're supposed to eat breakfast at the cabin now. And so he said, all right, get back in. So we loaded all 6 of us into the cab of his tow truck, and he drove us down to McDonald's, and we bought a McDonald's. Nice. It was very nice. It was Ohio. It wasn't the East Coast. It was back to friendly people. So again, and then, of course, once it got fixed, we were back on the road at noon, but now we still had 8 hours to go, got caught in Chicago traffic. We did not get to the cabin until like 9, 10 p.m., We were supposed to be there at 7 in the morning. It was a long day.
It happens, man.
Then we had a beautiful vacation. It was lovely.
Yeah. Trips never quite go as you hope they do, right?
Yes, that is true.
Something usually happens to make it memorable for the better or for the worse.
But memorable nonetheless.
Which brings us to our topic today, because we'd like to talk about mission trip disasters.
You've had some disasters on mission trips?
I have. You know, mission trips are a key element to most youth ministries. Everybody gets a chance to do some kind of missions trip, right? Can't have a youth ministry without that. So we've had lots of adventures over the years. I know you've had lots of adventures over the years.
Great stuff has happened over the years, but boy, a trip like that just has the potential of going south in a hurry.
That's true. You know, one thing I never imagined when I got into youth ministry was all the places I'd get to go. It's like being a travel agent sometimes.
Pretty exciting sometimes, the places we get to go. But one of the things I didn't know was the logistics that are involved in getting to go to all of those different places and dragging 10s and 20s and 30s of kids along with you.
Yeah.
It can get a little overwhelming, but
it's one thing to take your own kids somewhere and be responsible for them. It's quite another to take other people's kids in multiples of 10.
Multiples of 10.
To foreign countries.
Exactly.
Where you don't speak the language.
Exactly. So have you had any travel nightmares with your student ministry on a missions trip?
Yeah. The worst trip, I call it the trip from hell. I've tried to forget about it, but it haunts me to this day. It was quite a few years ago. I think it was 2004, maybe something like that, maybe 2005. So we were going to go to Mexico. Okay, we've gone to a couple different places in Mexico. Keep in mind, we're from Maryland, right? So, you know, East Coast Church, Mexico is a significant travel distance for us. But this particular year, we're going to go to Tecate, Mexico, which is near Tijuana, south of San Diego. So required a flight from Baltimore to San Diego. And the week that we chose for our trip, with, you know, great intelligence and foresight, was the week of July 4th. Because what better day to travel across the country than the 4th of July?
Why would you not travel?
Nobody else is traveling that day. It's great. It's just open airports. Nobody's around. Simple travel schedules. Yeah, so I think it was actually like July 2nd. It was a Sunday. We were supposed to meet at BWI. Everybody's supposed to meet at BWI. And the flight was at 8:30, maybe. And told everybody to be there at 6:30. So I used to be kind of late for everything. So I stroll in about 6:35. And everybody's there, but maybe one or two of the kids. And there is a line from the ticket counter out, winding out. You know, it was like the line to get into a British soccer game. It was crazy. And we didn't know what to do, so we tried to get some employees' help, you know, can we get the group to the front of the line? And they're like, no, just wait here. We talked to a couple of different people. They gave us differing advice. We didn't quite know what to do, so we're standing in this line. We're processing all the kids through. We finally get up to the ticket counter, and by the time we get up to the ticket counter, they tell us, sorry, but it's too late. You're not going to be able to get through security to get to your flight.
Oh, no.
I think we had like 20 kids. Like, you got to be kidding me. And so we start this process of dividing the team and getting us on different flights. This is already a nightmare, right? I've only been at the church 4 years. I've got some cash in my pocket as far as trust, but not a ton. So we end up splitting the team. We get on two separate flights. Everything's already all screwed up. And of course, given the fact that it's the 4th of July, everybody's traveling, God also thought it was funny to make this the worst weather day in United States history. So there's storms everywhere. Neither of the planes could actually land in the cities that they were originally destined for.
Of course. Why would they be able to do that?
We get redirected. I'm on team one. Other leaders are with team two. We get redirected. I think we landed in Chicago. Another team landed in St. Louis. This is how it ends up. So my team gets to San Diego that night. It's like 10 o'clock at night. We left at, 10 in the morning. Took us that long to get there. The other team isn't going to arrive until the following day.
Oh, no.
And they can't land in San Diego. They have to land in L.A. and rent a car and drive from L.A. to San Diego. The missions team is coming across the border to pick us up and take us back into Mexico. Our team goes over. Then we have to come back across the border the next day, get the rest of the team. It's already bad, right? This is the worst trip ever. It gets worse.
Oh, no. It can't get worse.
It does get worse. When I come across on the second day to pick up the rest of the team, I get a cell phone message saying that my son is in the hospital. He's like 5 years old. And we're not sure what's wrong with him. We think it's appendicitis. And he ends up getting his appendix out. And my wife is just a mess. She needs me to come home. He's got some kidney issues anyway, so we're not sure exactly what's going on. So I'm there a day and a half, pick up the rest of the team, and I'm like, I got to go home. I left. They drove me back across the border to San Diego on Tuesday. Remember, it started Sunday, Tuesday. I got to get back home to Maryland. I go to the airport. I can't get a flight until Wednesday.
Oh, no.
I get home Wednesday night. Oh, my flight home gets redirected into Atlanta. Get stuck in Atlanta, the worst airport in the U.S. I get home Wednesday night at 10 o'clock and go to the hospital, see my little boy there with his appendix out. He's fine. But so the trip starts Sunday at 6 o'clock in the morning. For me, it ended Wednesday at 10 o'clock at night. I had one day in Mexico. Half the team got there a day late. My son is sick, and it was the worst trip ever.
Oh, man. That is not fun.
So be on time. In fact, be early.
Be early to the airport.
That's the lesson I learned. It's never happened since. So yeah, I'm doing better now.
Earlier, the better, for sure.
How about you? Any trouble?
Yeah, you know, I probably more than I'd like to even remember, but I do remember one of the first trips I took. This is probably 26, 27 years ago now. Probably the first missions trip I took. Youth pastor in Wisconsin at the time, and we were going to Monterrey, Mexico, just south of Laredo, Texas.
Yeah.
And we went with YWAM, and there was a base in Wisconsin that we coordinated the trip with, and there were 13 people on my team, 11 students, and myself and one other leader, and YWAM's brilliant plan was to drive us there. And they did
Wisconsin?
These trips from Wisconsin.
Whoa.
And they used to do these trips all the time. They'd fill a coach bus, an old Greyhound bus.
With other churches.
Yeah, with other churches and stuff. But as it turned out, on our trip, we were the only group going for that week. So they put the 13 of us in a 15-passenger van with two drivers, so 15 people in a 15-passenger van for 40 hours of driving. I thought I was going to lose my pea-picking mind. So anyway, we drive down to Laredo. Then we get to Laredo, and a bus picks us up. And then we cross the border, and we were heading down to Monterrey, which is a couple-hour drive.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but at what point did you sign off on this?
I was too dumb. I was too young and dumb to know that that was not normal. So I thought, well, this must be what a mission trip is. So in we go. So we get into Mexico. Of course, the bus breaks down between the border and our place where we're going. And, you know, we have to sit on the side of the road for 4 or 5 hours. I think we were in transit for 55, 60 hours, I think. Had a great week in Mexico. It was wonderful. Now we're turning around. The great news is the staff down in Mexico was done for the season of mission trips. It was a spring break type. Ours was the last trip.
Okay.
So now we're going to take more people back to Wisconsin with us. So now we have two 15-passenger vans for about 20 people, 22 people. So we're spreading out a little bit. Life is good. And we're cruising, you know, up through Texas, you know, into Kansas. All of a sudden, one of the vans is on the side of the road. And we think, oh, and a flat tire or something. No, blew the engine. So the van is donezo. So now we're about 45 minutes from an airport where they're going to rent another van to finish the drive back. So for 45 minutes, we had 22 people in a 15-passenger van.
Oh, my goodness.
With all of our luggage.
What?
Going to the airport, in which we rented a minivan. So now we had 22 people for 22 seats for the next, like, 25 hours to get us back to Wisconsin. I tell you what, it was...
You lived through that?
I lived through it. And again, at the time, again, this was my first missions trip as a youth pastor. I was probably 21 years old, 22 years old. How anybody trusted me with their child to take them to Mexico at that point in time, I still, to this day, have no idea. And now I think, okay, that's not normal. There are other ways to do this. But you know what? It was a phenomenal trip. And honestly, for me, you know, that sort of just cut my teeth in student ministry missions, which has become a real big deal for me over the 3 decades that I've been doing this. And so, you know, at the end of the day, kind of, you know, it was a nightmare, but it worked out.
Good story to tell.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What about kids getting sick? You know, especially if you're going international, but even if you go locally, you know, you're outside your comfort zone, long hours, long days, 40, 50 hours in a van, you know, it brings out the best and the worst in our students. You ever have any kids just give you all kinds of fun stuff with the sickness?
I'll tell you what, there's some great foods available in some of these countries. Some of which you should eat and some of which you shouldn't, right?
Many of which you shouldn't.
They give you great warnings about things, but, you know, kids being kids, they end up eating something anyway. Yeah, we were in Peru probably about 10 years ago, and one of my students got Montezuma's Revenge with the oral element of that as well. And so,
is Montezuma's Revenge actually an officially sanctioned illness?
Yeah, I think if you check with the CDC,
it's on their website.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, so this kid spent about 24 hours puking, and I should have been sympathetic, but the truth is I was just kind of ticked off that he was keeping me awake because he was staying in my room and I had to listen to him puke all night. But by morning, it got serious enough that we had to actually get him to the hospital. They gave him some, I don't know what they give you. There's some kind of shot in the butt that is supposed to kick this.
I've had that shot.
You've had that shot.
Multiple times, actually.
Yeah, we called his mother. She kind of panicked, but he turned out to be okay. He just missed a couple of days of the trip.
Oh,
no
man.
Fun. No fun.
No kidding. Well, interestingly enough, mine centers around Peru as well. We've been going to Peru for a long time.
It must be Peru.
And I remember the first trip I took the church I'm currently at to Peru. Mm-hmm. And a team of about 35. About 27 students and 7 or 8 leaders, and we were up high in the Andes Mountains in Peru, and we had an absolute wonderful week of ministry. The interesting thing that happened, though, is because our team was bigger that year than it had been, there were 2 little hostels that in this town that we were working in, only 2 places to stay, and they were across the village from each other, I mean, a good mile and a half apart, and so the way it worked out, all of the students could fit at one of them with 1 leader. And then all the other leaders were at the other hostel, which, you know, again, on its surface, the only time we spent at the hostels was sleeping. So that was fine. I said, you know what, it's my baby. I'll stay with the students at the one hostel. Leaders can stay over there. Everything will be great. That'll be fine. Well, everything was great until, you know, we had a bad evening. went out for dinner and
some bad chicken?
Must have had some bad chicken or some bad rice or bad something, and it swept through our group.
Oh.
I mean, I am talking like I have never – I would say there were about 8 or 9 kids that got just absolutely crushed. And so the whole night, we're talking people just back and forth to the bathroom. And this was Montezuma's Revenge that was coming out of, in most students' case, both. And it was just terrible. And so I'm up, I'm holding girls' hair back as they're puking, and I'm going. And then
you didn't call for reinforcements.
You know, they were a mile and a half away, and there was no communication. I would have had to walk down there. I was just mad. You know, you're kind of in the middle of it.
Get some
you're in the middle of it. You don't know.
I don't do puke well.
I'll remember this as long as my life happens. I will remember this. It was probably about 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and things had calmed down a little bit. There was a little lull, and I had to go to the bathroom. So I wander down to the bathroom. There's one bathroom at this place we're staying at. One bathroom. So we're managing people in and out of this one bathroom. And I know that another wave is coming. So I walk in the bathroom, and I find in the toilet the largest dookie I have ever seen in my entire life. So big that it could not flush. whoever left that there, and to this day, no student has owned it. I would have owned up to that. I would have been proud. That person gave birth. But I tried to break it up, but it was so big you couldn't even break it up.
You tried to break it up with what?
With a broom handle. Whatever I could find. And it got to the point where the only option that I had was to go find a garbage bag, put my hand in the garbage bag, reach in, remove said dookie from the toilet, and then take the trash out to the curb. And that's what I did at 4 o'clock in the freaking morning in the high Andes mountains of Peru. And it was a good thing because shortly after that, the next wave started and kids were coming in and coming out. And we needed that bathroom.
Oh,
praise the Lord for mission trips.
Wow.
Good times.
Wow. Did you take a picture?
I did not think to take a picture because this was back before like cell phone pictures. Okay. I would have had to go find a camera. And my mind was not sharp that evening.
Yeah, we actually have some pictures in our archive somewhere of the largest dookie ever dropped on the trip. Yeah, it's about the size of a football.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah,
you took a picture of it.
We did. It was a tourist attraction.
Oh my goodness!
People were coming from all around to see it. Wow, I'm impressed. You actually reached in there with your hand.
The hand was I double bagged. I didn't want to take any chances there. So.
Wow, that's something.
Yeah. Now, you know, on trips like that, with the travel, with the sickness, obviously you get lots of opportunities for kids to kind of melt down, break down, which is actually part of the deal.
It's what you want.
To get them
to some extent, yeah.
Unfortunately, that also puts you in a position where it's quite possible you could have a leader that you're counting on.
Correct.
To help you manage this chaos that is a student missions trip,
right?
Reach that point of melting down. Ever have that happen?
Oh yeah. In fact, usually what happens is on some trips you end up taking some leaders who aren't usually on your youth leader staff, right? Maybe a couple parents. You need some additional reinforcements, or somebody really wants to go, and so you take some people who don't normally do youth ministry. They don't have a lot of experience spending a week with kids. Those are the people that, bless their heart, by the fourth or fifth day of very little sleep, eating weird foods, being stressed out by teenagers who aren't obeying what they are asking for, they usually have a meltdown moment. I call it the meltdown moment, and I've actually come to expect it, because if you just expect it, it's easier to handle when it comes.
You just roll with it.
So, yeah, I can think of a woman on a trip to Mexico. It was about the fifth day. She was along for the trip and was a parent, hadn't had a lot of experience in youth ministry. And I don't even remember what caused it, but she just became a blubbering pool of melted tears. I mean, she just couldn't
handle.
Couldn't function. We still had a couple days to go. We had more work to do. We actually had like a trip at the end of the week, you know, the tourist type of thing. And she was just a disaster. I don't think she ever went another trip, actually.
Mm-hmm. I've had a handful of those that they declare in the moment, I'm never doing this again.
Exactly.
And most of them, that's not true. But some of them, it is the absolute God-honest truth, because they've lost it. I remember a mom. Again, this was a mom, not used to student ministry, just wanted to share the experience. She had two kids going on the trip, and so she signed up and trekked out there and thought, I got this, I can do this. And, oh, man, about 4 or 5 days into it, she just literally could not function. Just could not get out of bed without crying.
Yep.
And just couldn't, it was a mess. I'm not cut out for this. I can't do this. And so, honestly became one of those things where I had to manage that person.
Yeah, that's
for
what happens.
For the rest of the trip, which is difficult.
I've actually started to have this conversation up front with people and tell them, look, I know this happens because I've seen it happen, and I want to have this conversation with you today to make sure this isn't going to be you 5 days into this trip, because I need you as a leader on this trip. I need you to finish strong.
I don't need to lead you.
Exactly.
I've got other things to take care of.
That's helped a little bit to eliminate some of those meltdown moments.
Yep.
The last thing we thought of for mission trip disasters is just those moments where you lose control.
Yeah, you're straight.
Now, part of this is you want to lose control because you're trying to be led by the Holy Spirit. That's what the trip is about, the experiences and the situations you find yourselves in that you never expected.
Right, and you
can't plan for.
And you want that for you as much as you want that for your students.
Absolutely.
Which is one of the reasons we plan these trips and go on these trips.
Yeah.
But part of that course is it comes to us as well.
Sometimes it's almost a little more than we can bear.
I agree.
I know you've got a good story about losing control of the situation.
Lost control of the situation. I almost lost my entire group. So one year, this is back in 1999, I was at my church in Wisconsin, and we decided to go to El Salvador. And this was shortly after Hurricane Mitch, and it had done some damage down there. And so we wanted to go do a little relief and a little evangelism. And so through some contacts I had with YWAM, they got me connected with a pastor down there.
You went back with YWAM.
Well, you know, it was just contacts I had at YWAM. This was not a YWAM trip. Actually, we planned this ourselves.
Okay.
They weren't
driving you there.
No, they weren't. They were not driving us there. We flew there. But they connected us with this pastor, and he was a great guy. He was a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
Set up some incredible ministry for us. We got down there. We spent a week on the mainland of El Salvador just doing these. He had four school programs set up for us every day where we'd go to the public schools and do our dramas and dances and preach the gospel. I mean, we were in front of 1,500 kids a day for six straight days. It was unbelievable. And then he said, hey, I got this idea. I want to go help this church that's on this island that's about an hour off the coast of El Salvador. And we're like, yeah, that sounds great. We want to go to an island, man. We're out down in the South Pacific. This is great. And so so he says, I've arranged for the El Salvadorian Navy to take us out to the island on one of their boats. Those open boats where the front drops and the troops run on, like in Normandy?
Yeah.
That was one of those boats. So we file a team of 35 people onto this boat, and off we go, and we're coming out to the island, and we pull up to this little port on the island, and all, a bunch of people get off, and a bunch of stuff gets off, and I'm getting ready to grab all my stuff, and the pastor says, no, we got to go around the other side of the island, because the church is on the other side of the island, and you can't get there from here because there's a volcano on the island. Okay, so we go around, and as we're pulling up, the boat captain is arguing with the pastor, and I know enough Spanish to know that they're kind of going at it, and he's saying, no, I can't take the boat to the shore because it's not protected from the surf. The waves are going to beats the boat. And of course, in true fashion, this pastor talks the captain into, you're going to drive towards the beach, you're going to drop the thing, and then you're going to start going in reverse so you don't get stuck, and we're just going to run off onto the beach. So we line these people up.
What?
You know, so I have to line, all right, we need 15 volunteers. First 15, grab your bag and put it on your shoulder and get up to the front, and when we say go, run. So we come up. The thing drops. He starts going in reverse, and he says, go! And 15 kids run and think they're going to be running out of... They fell into 10 feet of water, holding their bags, just right to the ground. And, of course, then they bob up, and they up the shore they go, just water pouring out of their bags. It was a little harder to get the second group of volunteers.
You think so?
But during the second run, a big wave came and actually beached the boat. So the rest of us walked out on dry land. It was fine. But then the boat was beached. They had to call another boat, another Navy boat.
The captain was right.
Captain was right.
Of course he was right. He's the captain.
He knows what's going on. So as soon as they pulled out, I looked at the pastor and I said, they're not coming back for us. How are we going to get off this island? Oh, no, they'll come back. They'll come back. So anyway, we're on the island for 4 or 5 days, and we're, you know, it's great stuff. Good stuff with the church. Church was great.
Did you see
great
King Kong
projects.
There?
No, I did not. But it's the whole island smelled like rotting mangoes. To this day, I can't eat a mango. Anyway,
you didn't find yourself beautiful. Subject of a human sacrifice?
No, I did not. I did not. But we had a beautiful time. Help fix this church.
Do you have any volunteers to be sacrificed here?
Exactly. The day of the departure comes. We're out of food. We've eaten everything, and there's nothing on the island. We can't get anything. Well, they're rotting mangoes. So for breakfast, for 35 people, we had 2 boxes of Rice Krispies and 3 cans of refried beans. And so we just divvied it up. Everybody got 2 spoonfuls of refried beans and a handful of Rice Krispies at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then we packed all our stuff and headed down to the beach to wait for 10 a.m. when the boat was going to come back and get us. 10 a.m., noon, 1, 2 afternoon, no boat. And I keep saying to the pastor,
Do you have any communication with them?
No, nothing. There's no communication. This is 1999.
You have a flare.
Yeah, basically. So finally, with the pastor and I, we whistle a little fishing boat in, and we jump in the fishing boat, and we zip around the island back to kind of the port area, and we go to the little Navy station. Hey, where's the boat? Oh, boat's not coming over there. You guys got to get here. how are we going to get here? He's like, just rent a bunch of fishing boats. So we are out. We're like renting these like little wooden fishing boats. And then one, we found one boat. I swear, it looks like the boats that would come into Miami back in the 80s, you know, with the little white tarp on top with just people everywhere. Rented this boat. We cruise back around. Now we're loading everybody up and their gear into these little wooden fishing boats. And we're cruising around the island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. I mean, swells, 6 feet, you know, we're up and we're down. Some of the kids were losing their minds. They were crying. I had kids singing, "It's the end of the world as we know it." It was a nightmare. I'm in the last boat, and in my head, I'm thinking, I am not bringing everyone home from this trip. So, yeah. I mean, somebody, one of these boats, because we're not wearing life jackets, we're wearing our backpacks. You know, I'm like, one of these boats is going to go over, and it's just over. Well, as luck would have it, nobody went over. We made it around, and we sat in this town and waited for like 6 hours for the boat to come. And then the boat finally comes, probably about 7 o'clock at night. So we've been on the beach since like 6 in the morning. Now it's 7 o'clock at night. All we've had to eat is Rice Krispies and refried beans. We get on this boat. It's about a two-hour boat ride into town. We get into town at like 10 o'clock at night. And we go to this like rotisserie chicken place and just destroy more chicken than I've ever seen in my life. And then had to take a 5-hour bus ride back to where we were staying for the night. It was just one of those moments where most of that day I thought, I have completely lost control and I don't think I'm going to get everybody home. And what am I going to do with my life? I mean, it's over. I mean, you know, at this point in time, how could I go on from that? But
how did you stay calm in that?
I don't remember. I mean, it's so much of that is blurry. You had to deal with each moment as it came.
The thing about it is, at every point, you probably thought, "Well, it can't get any worse than it is."
And then
right
it just
now.
Kept getting
and it
worse.
Kept getting worse.
And honestly,
yeah,
then what?
That's how I felt on my plane flight.
Even when we got back, and we had the chicken, and now we've got this. It's. I mean, we're out of the chicken joint at like 11:30 at night. And we got a 5-6 hour bus ride there, and we had come down in two buses, which was pretty comfortable. But the pastor said, "Oh, by the way, the brakes went out in one of the buses, so we're going to put all the gear on that bus. No people." All the other people. So now we're 5-6 across on a school bus.
Oh,
people
gosh.
Are standing for a 5-hour bus through the night, and we're just driving. I just kept thinking, it can't get any worse than this. So anyway, we made it back. It could have.
The chicken could have wrapped you.
We could all been sick.
Revenge.
Yes. Yeah.
And you could have been pulling a giant dookie out of the back seat of the bus.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So you know we have travel nightmares. Kids get sick. If leaders melt down, we lose control.
Yep.
All of these things are what I like to say par for the course on a trip
they
like
are.
This.
And we all almost should expect them. Maybe not quite to that extreme, hopefully.
And we don't wish for them. We don't hope for them, and they are difficult in the time.
They
but
are.
Having been in this a while, sometimes those are the moments you need.
They are, because they put us in a place where things happen spiritually that could not happen otherwise.
It's a crucible.
It's out of our control. God is grinding us up in these moments, grinding our kids up in these moments with experiences and levels of trust that you can't get to if you feel like you're in control.
Right.
And it's just, it's what mission trips are all about.
And most mission trip disaster stories are terrible stories for the first couple of years.
Yeah.
Because
I'm sure you loved talking to your parents when you got back.
Yeah,
didn't go so well.
We had to decide what version of this story are we going to tell. You know, how many details do they actually need about how we got from
the island?
All right,
everyone, listen. Here's what we're going to say when we get back.
Yeah. But then you get a few years down the road,
yeah.
And now the story becomes it's a funny story.
They're the greatest memories.
And they're the greatest memories. And I literally was at a wedding about 3 weeks ago down in Florida, and two of the kids that were on that trip were at that wedding. One was getting married and one was the best man.
Yeah.
And we sat around after the wedding over dinner and just laughed ourselves silly because these were the two kids who were singing "It's the End of the World as We Know It" as the rest of the kids were crying. And we just laughed about that because, again, now, what are we, almost 20 years later, it's a great story. One of the kids that was on that trip went into missions.
Yeah.
and was a missionary for 6 years. And then when she came out of missions, she was my middle school director for eight years. You know, and just it launched her into a life of ministry. And so, I don't know that that would have happened if everything would have been perfect.
So what you see is God bringing redemption out of these crazy moments and transforming people's lives because of the extreme circumstances that they find themselves in on a missions trip.
Yep. Beauty for ashes.
Beauty for ashes, yeah.
The scriptures come back to bring it home. So we hope that hearing these stories makes you feel like you're not alone, because some of you are probably going, yeah, I had that same thing happen.
Yeah, you feel like you've messed up or you have done something that has put everybody in jeopardy, and maybe you have.
Yep.
And you'll learn from that, hopefully.
You'll get to the airport earlier.
Yes, you'll get to the airport earlier.
Experience.
You won't go to the island without assurances.
Without a real travel plan
for
getting there and back.
Yeah. But you will survive that trip. You will make it back. You'll have stories to tell. You'll have experiences that you couldn't have gotten otherwise.
Yeah.
And your kids will have grown spiritually in a way that you never could have anticipated.
Yeah. You won't just survive it. You'll thrive.
That's
because
right.
of it.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing. So we hope that is an encouragement for you, for those who have been through that ringer, have similar stories. But for those of you who do not yet have these stories,
get ready.
They're coming. But don't be afraid of that.
Yeah.
Be almost in anticipation for that, because as hard as they'll be in the moment, they will lead to some of the greatest transformations and the greatest spiritual growth. And one day, you'll be sitting around with your buddies or even sitting around with those kids when they're raising their own kids, and you'll laugh until your sides hurt about that trip.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that wraps it up for Episode 6, Youth Ministry Sherpas. We have ideas for the coming podcast. We're going to talk about numbers and what those...
The numbers game.
The numbers game in youth ministry, what that's all about.
How they can encourage us, how they can discourage us, and how do we just deal with the numbers game.
Don't forget, our show notes are available on the website. You can go to youthministrysherpas.com. You can find episode 6, and you'll find show notes there if you want to reflect on what we've talked about today.
Love to have you interact with us on the Facebook page or the Instagram, just either with your own stories or... we just love to hear feedback from this episode on those places. And if you have not done so yet, we'd love for you to give us a review on iTunes and help spread the word on this podcast to anybody else who you think might be helpful for.
That's right. And don't forget to sign up. Go to our website, sign up there for our e-newsletter, and you'll be entered into the contest to win the $50 prize pack from Youth Ministry Sherpas.
A couple weeks from now, we'll announce the big winner.
All right. We'll look for you next time on Youth Ministry Sherpas. Thanks for being with us.